Welcome to this edition of the Writer's Voice for Virginia Voice. I'm Robin Farmer, and today's guest author is Stacy Hawkins Adams, author of 9 novels and 1 nonfiction spiritual devotional book. And that's only part of this talented wordsmith's list of accomplishments. Stacy writes an award-winning parenting column for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, where I had the pleasure of befriending her in 1993 when she joined the paper. She also writes for the Huffington Post and coaches aspiring and published writers, among even more responsibilities, while holding a full-time job as a communications director for an area independent school. And there's even more that this dynamo works on, which is why she was a WYCA of Richmond Outstanding Woman of the Year, a Style Weekly Top 40 honoree, and a member of the 2015 class of Leadership Metro Richmond. But for the next half hour, we will focus on her writing career, which I think can be summed up by saying, you are a word artist. And thank you for sharing time with us today. Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you for having me, Robin.
So, Stacy, many writers have heart themes. They're things that they write about in every book, in every short story, common messages that you will find. What are common themes in your books, and what are some of the central questions your protagonists grapple with?
I would say from my writing and my characters, and even in my nonfiction writing, I tend to write about women on journeys to find themselves. And I didn't know that that's what I was doing when I first started. When I wrote my first book, it was about a character who was on this journey to accepting some personal revelations and finding herself. But as I began to write, I started to hear from women. I started to hear from readers that, wow, I've run away from faith, and your book helped me rediscover that. Or I didn't know the power of women's friendships until I read your story. Now I'm going to seek out women mentors, or I'm going to become a mentor to other women. So I think for me, I'm writing about themes of personal growth. I'm writing about the struggle with faith that people have. Some people cling to their faith. Some people use it as a crutch. Some people run from it. But what does that look like for you as an individual? And what does that look like through my character? So I think it's a central message of faith without being preachy or trying to proselytize to anyone, but helping you grapple with what that looks like for you as a reader. That's one of my central goals as well.
How did working as a journalist help you shape some of these themes, some of these messages?
Well, the journalism training was just really wonderful. First of all, it teaches you how to write on deadline. It teaches you how to get to the heart of the matter. Journalistic writing is very concise and simple, while in a novel, you want to flow and have some literary prose with the vivid pictures you paint. So you have to strike a balance with that. But I would say the journalism helped me to write lean, to get to the heart of the matter with what the message is. And then I could always go back and add the other pieces. And part of that was writing an inspirational column for 6 years for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. It was actually called Inspirations. And in that column, I had an opportunity to interview people from all walks of life, all different faiths, maybe people who were not necessarily people of faith, but they overcame challenges that were inspiring to other people. And what was striking to me was that in doing that, again, I heard from readers who said, I'm an atheist, but there's something that draws me to this column, or I'm Jewish, and I know you're not, but I still can read this and get inspiration from it. So really being a journalist taught me how to share other people's truths and their humanity in a way that I hope also translates well in my fiction.
I like sharing with listeners reviews from fans. And this is the first review I read at random. The Someday list made me think about myself and my life. The life lessons were hard to miss. I'm hard-pressed to believe anyone would close its pages and not feel the same way. So I give this book the highest review I can assign because not only did I enjoy it, I was challenged. In my opinion, that's the role of literature, to shape our conscious thinking and inspire our actions in a way that also entertains us. I highly recommend this novel to anyone who feels the same. Isn't that reviewer's review what it's all about? To write something that makes your readers not only think, but perhaps to think and act differently.
I don't often read the reviews, but that gives me chills because that is exactly what it's about. And that's exactly what I'm trying to accomplish with the fiction. So, gosh, that means a lot.
So can you do our listeners a favor and read us an excerpt?
I have one from Watercolored Pearls, which somewhat captures what that reviewer was talking about in that review. The Someday List happens to be my fifth novel, but Watercolored Pearls is my third novel. And so the excerpt that I'll read is almost a romantic piece, and I don't necessarily write romance novels, but all of my books talk about relationships of all kinds. So the excerpt I'm going to read is about a woman named Erica who has left an abusive marriage, and she has a chance to start over with a really good guy, but she can't really wrap her mind around what that looks like. She's kind of letting her fear block this opportunity, and so that's what this excerpt is. Erica sipped her spiced chai latte and stared at her boss. She was in dangerous territory. Every professional training program in the history of the world offered caution about workplace relationships, and here she was, sitting with a man who paid her bills and made her heart race. Derek had come to Richmond this morning to join her and Gabrielle in a series of meetings with local clients. He also had agreed to help her prepare for the National Council for Interior Design exam. But that was before last month, when she had invited him to the cookout at Serena and Micah's home. She didn't know now if he was still willing to spend hours with her going over the material. Since the cookout, they had corresponded mostly through Gabrielle or via email. Today was D-Day of sorts. She had asked him to meet her early this morning, but she wasn't certain whether to stick to business and talk to him later about their personal issues or vice versa. Gabrielle had advised her to get the personal out of the way. If you don't, it's going to be hanging between the two of you like the elephant in the room. Our clients will be able to tell. We don't want them to have any concerns. So here she sat in Vita France, the cozy restaurant located in the James Center atrium in the heart of Richmond's business district. She tore off a piece of her cinnamon scone and popped it into her mouth. Derek glanced at his watch and took a sip of coffee. He settled in the booth and, with his eyes and square jaw, told Erica he wasn't happy with her right now. "You've grown a goatee," she said. Derek's demeanor didn't soften. He leaned forward and wrapped his hands around the side of his cup. "We've got a lot of work to do today, Erica. What do you need to talk to me about?" She sighed and dabbed her lips with the paper napkin she'd been clutching on her lap. "I don't know, Derek. A lot of things, I guess. I don't blame you for not returning my calls, but then again, there's too much between us to play these games." He frowned. "Erica, maybe you need to look in the mirror." "Excuse me? I've left you several messages apologizing for making you feel used, Derek, when you came down last month," she said. "It was a knee-jerk reaction to something Elliot did, and I was wrong. I was dead wrong. But I do care about you, Derek." He nodded and adjusted his tie. If nothing else, Erica knew he was still hitting the gym most weeknights. The tailored shirt hugged his bulging arms in the right places. She tried to focus on what he was saying. "You have a funny way of showing it, Erica. If you're still reacting to the antics of your abusive husband, that says a lot. You need to figure out where you stand with him before you'll ever be able to move forward with another relationship. We've talked about this before. You and I are always going to be friends. You are an excellent employee. Nothing has changed since I first expressed how I felt about you. I'm here for you, no matter what. But it's been 2 years, Erica." Derek slipped on his suit jacket and shrugged it into place. "You know how I feel about you." A chill coursed through Erica as he punctuated each word. Elliot used to speak to her that way, but his emphasis was always dripping with venom. Derek's conviction conveyed an emotion she wasn't sure she could handle yet. She tried to keep her voice from trembling. "I know, Derek," she whispered. "I'm sorry." Why couldn't she tell him that she felt the same? Derek sat back and sighed. She could tell that he was wrestling with himself too. In his eyes, she saw the same feelings jockeying for space inside of her: anger, frustration, and love. "You concentrate on Erica, on loving yourself and figuring out what you want," Derek told her. "I am always here for you and for Aaron, even if you decide to stay with Elliot. But for now, we are just friends. And when we're in the office, colleagues. I'm praying for you, Erica." Erica pulled her hands toward Derek, but he pushed back her grasp. She wrapped her arms around herself. She thought she might lose it right then and there. When Derek laid $15 on the table and picked up his briefcase, she realized she had already lost him.
Very nice. So your writing is very relatable, and there's power and beauty in that. But then the flip side is people might think you're writing about yourself. So how do you deal with that?
People always think I'm writing about myself. And I laugh because I'm telling you, my very first book was Speak to My Heart. And my mother read that book, and I'll call her and say, what do you think? What are you thinking? She's like, you need to tell your girlfriend Erica to leave Ellen. He is no good. And I'm like, Mom, I'm not Serena. And so people literally think I'm every character. So actually, it's a compliment because then it means that I have immersed myself in these characters so much. And some of the voice, some of the intonations probably are me. As a writer, you probably do bring yourself a little bit to each character. And with that book being set in Richmond, as it was, and I live in Richmond, and so yeah, that people would certainly think that. But I get that for every single main character that I write. So I'm not Serena, I'm not Shiloh, I'm not Dana. But if you want to think that and it makes you read, I'll go along with it.
And some of the book covers, the women kind of favor you a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
On your website, you wrote that reading fuels the soul, writing frees it. It's lovely. When did you realize that? When did you realize that writing was a calling and that ink ran through your blood?
Really, when I was 10 years old, which sounds odd. So I started writing as a very young child. Probably when I learned how to read, I became a writer. And I just wrote prolifically poems and short stories and all of that. And my fourth grade teacher let me write the class play. So everyone nurtured that in me. But when I was in fifth grade, my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Alma Jackson, of course, she celebrated my writing as well. So unbeknownst to me, I had submitted a poem about police officers, which I could still recite. It's so corny. But unbeknownst to me, she took this poem and she mailed it to the local police department in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, where I grew up. And about 2 weeks later, I got a letter in the mail from the police chief, Bobby Norman. I still have this letter. And, you know, it comes in the mail. My brother had stopped by our parents' home, and he runs in with this letter from the police department. He's like, what have you done? You're in trouble. Like, oh, no. Anyway, open the letter, and it's basically a letter thanking me for this poem. And he's like, you know, police officers don't get recognized as much. And, of course, as I said, I was 10 years old, fifth grade, maybe 11 years old. And this was way back before all of the drama we deal with now or issues concerning, you know, police and authority. So back then, as an innocent child, you get this letter from this police officer, the police chief, saying your letter has made a difference. It's made us feel great. We framed it and posted it on the wall of the police department. You're welcome to come down for a tour and you can come see it. That was a light bulb moment for me at that young age because I realized, wow, my friends and family, they kind of have to be nice. But to get a letter from a complete stranger, an authority figure saying this has made a difference and I'm hanging it for all to see, that was my light bulb moment that words could truly make a difference.
Talk about validation.
Exactly.
You not only write novels and nonfiction books, you also coach.
Yes.
And you've had the pleasure of helping some of your clients become authors. How satisfying is that process? And tell listeners who are interested in working with you where to go to learn more.
As you become a published author, you do begin to get many emails from aspiring writers, and you want to help as many as you can. And so just because of my own busy schedule with, you know, writing, working full time and raising children, I wasn't always able to respond to people and answer their many, many questions. And then I started to realize a lot of the questions were similar. Probably about 6 years ago, I started sort of a side, I don't know if you want to call it a business, but a program for aspiring authors called Author in You. And so you can go to the website, authorinyou.com, and there you'll kind of see a schedule of different courses I offer, one-on-one coaching. And so when I started it about 5 or 6 years ago, I would offer these 6-week courses, and they're teleconference calls. So you would call in once a week over a 6-week period, and I would teach lessons. I would invite my fellow best-selling authors to call in, everything from how to create emotion in your characters to how to stay disciplined, to how to begin to think about marketing your work. So that's what those 6-week courses are like. I haven't taught those in recent years because what I found was the classes were helpful, but really mentoring writers is really more impactful. So when you go to authorinyou.com now, there's a page, authorinyou.com/focused writers. And so the Focus Writers Group is really where I have like an online membership community, very minimal fee to join it. But basically what we do is we've got a private Facebook group. We talk several times a week. I share articles, I share tips, I share inspiration. But the other members of the group do that for each other as well. So it really has become almost like a mastermind group for the members. And then once a month, we have a live call. And so on that call, everyone goes around. And some are nonfiction writers. Some only are writing blogs. Some are trying to figure out what they want to do as writers. And then we have some aspiring novelists as well as new novelists or new writers. So everyone goes around and shares what they're working on in the month. And the beauty of it is, if you're a nonfiction writer and you're trying to figure out how to get your blog up and running, I may share 2 or 3 minutes of tips about that that then helps the novelist with something she's working on. One of our aspiring writers, she's working on a book for children about what it means to be homeless. And yet there's another writer who teaches older adults who deal with that. And so there's some cross-pollination there and how they can do the research, how they can write about it, those kinds of connections. So it's really just kind of a beautiful kind of flow to it. And then if I get really busy with other writing, or if I'm on deadline and I'm not writing, another writer in that group will kind of step up and say, hey, here's an article, or hey, here's another class you might want to take that's more technical. So I've kind of morphed that piece of it into more of, I feel like it's really more mentoring the writers, although I do offer them the technical help as well. So I really find that gratifying. And your initial question about when they become published, it's almost like if you've got a favorite niece or nephew or a child that has graduated from high school or college and they're launching into the world. That's exactly how I feel when I see the writers, because they've done the hard work and I've just sort of been there helping them and, you know, guiding them and encouraging them. And then to see them make their dreams come through, that's very gratifying.
Fantastic. Your latest book, Finding Home,
yes,
was released earlier this year, March.
Yes.
It is the third novel in your Winds of Change series. Can you read an excerpt?
Yes, I can. I'm going to actually read the first chapter, because the writing of this or the plot for this was a little bit different for me, because it almost feels soap opera-ish to me. But I talked to quite a few millennials who told me that 20-something and 30-somethings who watch reality TV, it's not as far-fetched as I would think. So this woman, this character, she is a renowned motivational speaker who almost landed a TV show with Oprah's network, and it kind of fell through, and she's not really gotten over that. And so she's got this new opportunity before her, and it causes her to do some strange things. And so just so you know, Erica is actually in her mid-30s, even though she's doing these strange things.
So she's a millennial, right?
Yeah, she is a millennial. Yeah. So yeah, that's why I trusted the millennials on this. And I think it worked. I've gotten some good feedback from readers. Jessica Wilson Arnold decided her plan was ridiculous seconds after she conceived it. Grown women with great lives had no reason to resort to lies. The more she tried to talk herself out of it, however, the more the scheme took shape. If she could squeeze 2 or 3 solid months out of this fantastical fabrication, a life that was already amazing would morph into grand, and she and Keith could do whatever they wanted. It would be risky, but she had already come up with an explanation that would leave few people asking questions or making demands. And with time, the situation eventually would be forgotten. That meant for now, she was pregnant, kind of, with goals and dreams that might not ever be birthed if she faced another setback. Jessica made peace with that reasoning while wrapping up lunch with Sage Bennett at a salad bar in downtown Indianapolis, where they had stopped after their meeting with the Bravo TV executives to celebrate Jessica's coup. Not many people got one shot, let alone two, at hosting a talk show on national TV. Both women agreed it was a big deal. But right now, so was the news Jessica had just shared with Sage to explain her recent weight gain. She might be moving on to Bravo, but in the meantime, she had to keep Sage's viewers at a local news station happy. "Now it all makes sense," Sage said, beaming. "You've been hosting weekly segments on WNVX for 3 years, looking as toned and fabulous as ever. I should have known when I saw you growing puffy that you and Keith had decided to start a family. Congratulations, Jess." Jessica forced a smile. She no longer had an appetite, but she reached for the last slice of bread resting on her plate in the center of the table and slid a piece of it between her lips, hoping she could change the subject without having to create more details on the spot. She would if she had to, though, because Sage's reaction confirmed why the lie had become necessary. Local TV viewers were noticing the 20 pounds she had packed on, and since Jessica's 5-minute segments focused on how to stay in shape in order to succeed in all areas of life, They clearly expected her to look the part. She swallowed the morsel of bread and took a sip of her strawberry-infused water before pursuing the answer she simultaneously wanted and dreaded. So you've been hearing from viewers about me? Guess my black slacks and dresses aren't doing the trick, huh? Jessica sat back in her chair, oblivious to the noisy lunchtime crowd around them, and willed herself to stay calm. Sage shrugged. Not a lot, but yeah, viewers have been occasionally leaving comments when we post links to your weekly segments on the station's website. Nothing derogatory or we'd remove it, but you know how fickle people are. Sage's voice trailed off, and Jessica recalled the recent reaction she'd been receiving from local residents who saw her on air every Thursday, then found her motivational speaking website or met her at events. They weren't rude, but they weren't kind either. The comments were sure to be more prevalent when she took her TV segments onto the national stage in a few months and morphed the programming into an hour-long weekly talk show. Viewers of the pilot episodes for Bravo TV were going to be ruthless, and maybe even the network executives too. That meant for now, the only way around the devastating truth was to tell an equally devastating lie.
Fantastic. You know, when I was listening to you read, I was imagining the scenes. So you have 9 novels. Which one would you like to see as a movie?
Oh my gosh, all of them. But probably the one that I read from first, Watercolored Pearls. Because that book was written in 2000, well, it was published in 2007. And when I was writing that book, that was the first book that made me cry as I wrote. All of them strike a chord with me, but there was something about the journeys of these 3 women in very different places in life. And this older woman mentors them and kind of helps them center themselves. And basically, she tells them, stop stressing, stop worrying. You have to go through the process in order to reach the place you want to be. And that is a book that, even though it was written, you know, all those years ago, it still strikes a chord with readers. I published an anniversary edition of that book in early 2015, and I'm still getting reviews from people. And I didn't change much. It doesn't have as much about cell phones and texting. It's got minimal pieces of that because in 2007, it was a different world electronically. That doesn't seem to matter. And this was also the book that landed me a trip to Riviera Maya, Mexico, because a woman read this novel back in 2008 on her way to Dallas. She was going to see her 14-year-old goddaughter who was dying from a chronic illness. And something about this book struck a chord with her. She read it on the flight. It gave her hope. And after that, she called and invited me to be a speaker at this women's retreat she was planning in Mexico in 2009. So I think that is probably one of my favorites because it just poured out of me.
Who would you like to see star in Watercolor?
Oh, gosh. So it's got 3 lead characters. Probably Sanaa Lathan would be Serena.
Mm.
I haven't thought about this in a while. So like Morris Chestnut would be her husband, Micah.
Okay.
And then the other main characters are Erica and Tawana. So I'd have to think about who those characters would be because there's so many great new actresses on the scene. Now, Tawana would be a younger actress. One of the actresses from Queen Sugar, the woman who plays Charlie, she could probably be one of the actresses there. And so, yeah, I have to think about who Tawana would be. She's a 20-something young lady.
And with so many different avenues, Netflix and the cable stations, and they're looking for books, right? They're looking for books that they can adapt into television series and films. So you never know. You put it out there, right?
Yeah, exactly. One of my mentors, Daphne Maxwell Reed, she has a copy of Watercolor Pearls. And so she's trying to convince me to fund it myself. So I haven't gotten that brave quite yet, but you know, you never know. So I do believe in its own time that that book in particular could definitely be a series because it's layered. And that is the 3rd in that series. Speak to My Heart was first, Nothing But the Right Thing, and then Watercolored Pearls. But all of the books, my Winds of Change series, it's about a fictional family, the Burns family, in a fictional Texas town called Jubilant, Texas. And Jubilant is a metaphor for how we always try to go to a place or the things outside of ourselves to find happiness. In each of the books in that series, the characters realize that they've got to look within to find it. So that could be a great, you know, TV series or a movie as well.
It's a great message as well, too. So, Stacey, what's next? What are you doing writing-wise?
Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to figure that out. That's the beautiful thing about, you know, this time of year, the end of the year, the beginning of a new year, to figure out what's next on the horizon. I really am falling in love with my nonfiction writing right now. As you mentioned, I'm doing some blogging for the Huffington Post, and it's been a little bit around social justice, a little bit about women's empowerment. So trying to figure out what I want that to look like in 2017. A couple of people have suggested that I should write YA, which I know is your genre. So I'm thinking about exploring whether that's something I could tap into. All of my novels tend to have at least one teenage character. So I do tend to have teenagers reading all of my novels because there is that theme of an older woman usually mentoring a teenager. So if I were to foray into writing for younger folks, it probably would be more so for the teenagers. So maybe that fiction-wise, but really kind of looking at the nonfiction for a while. And I think the next novel I write, I think I might want to write a standalone book. With that in mind, I keep a notebook. I already have like the title of it. I already kind of know what that's going to look like, but I don't know what the story is yet. So that's the fun of being a writer. You kind of collect these ideas and you go into the what if mode until you know it's time to write.
So can you share the title of your possible 11th book?
I don't know if I want to share it yet. I don't want to jinx it. But I tell you, the title came, I was reading an article that someone had written, an inspirational article, and this person gave a description of what a willow tree is. And I thought, wow. So it talks about how this tree bends and it never breaks. And so that will be some of the theme. I'll tell you that much of what the book will be about.
Yeah, that's nice. Stacy, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to Virginia Voice.
Thank you for having me. And thanks to your listeners for tuning in.